Watch. Oh, that's all. That's all. So I should not delay you longer. That is why. In few words, man is the highest in all creation. And the highest aim that is before us in the man body, as given out by all masters who came in the past, is to know God. To know God, we must know ourselves first. God cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, nor intellect, nor vital ears. It is the soul alone that can know God. But our soul is under the control of mind, and mind is under the control of outgoing faculties. Our attention, which is the expression of our soul, is diffused into the world through the outgoing faculties and identified with them so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. As I told you, it is the soul alone that can know God. Like knows the like. Soul is conscious entity. God is all consciousness. The first thing is that we should know ourselves. All masters, whenever they came, they gave out the same thing, know thyself. How can we know ourselves? By liberating ourselves from the clutches of mind and outgoing faculties. Or you might say, by analyzing yourself from mind and matter. Or still further, you might say, to rise above body consciousness. When you know, you'll see that very God whom you find is already there. Man body is a wonderful house we live in. We are living in this man body, and we are also controlled in the man body on account of some higher power overhead. Otherwise, we could run away out of this man body. There are so many apertures in this wonderful house we live in. But we are controlled, we cannot go out. Breathing goes out. Some power cannot remain outside. Some power is bringing it back into the body. So that power which controls us in the body, that very power controls all universe. That is what is called God power. Or by so many names given by various masters, by different names. God wordless or nameless, when it came into being, that was called name, shabda, word. That God into expression power is the cause of all creation. So you reside in this very man body, and also whom you are after, for which purpose you have joined various schools of thought or religions, he also resides within you. Kingdom of God is within you. If you would like to find or enter in there, you'll have to enter in the laboratory of your man body. may be seeking outside for years and years. You may be observing so many rites and rituals which are performed at the level of the outgoing faculties. You cannot find a clue of that. So all Guru Nanak says, so long as you do not know yourself, you are in a grand delusion. So it is a pity. We are the indweller of the human body. That very power which we have to find is also already there. A fish living in the water inquires where water is. In the scriptures, you'll find a description of the findings the masters had in their lives when they come in contact with that God power. There only a description is given by reading which that can flare up an interest in you to know him, to have those very experiences what the masters had in their lives and are recorded in the scriptures. There the scope and what the scriptures say, God is within you. Body is the temple of God. All masters say that. In their own words, of course. So, if the God is within you, you must try to find him where he is. If you try to find him in the outward things, outward places, you cannot find him. We have regard for all scriptures, for they give beautiful, fine records of the experiences what the masters had in their life. We have respect for all places of holy worship for the reason they are made models out of the man body. Dome shaped all Hindu temples like head of the Hindu body. Cross shaped and nose shaped all churches within the symbols representing God. God is light. God is music of the spheres. So these are two symbols kept in those to show the such like light of God is shining within you, and such like music of the spheres of the voice of God is reverberating within you. That can be you can have contact with those when you rise above senses, above body consciousness. So it is a matter of practical self-analysis. How to rise above body consciousness? You can rise above of your own efforts, you are welcome. If not, you can seek the help of somebody who goes up and has the competency to raise your soul, liberate your soul from the clutches of mind and outgoing faculties, and is able to give you an experience of opening the inner eye to see the light of God and opening the inner ears to hear the voice of God. Call him by any name you like. He is a man like you by outward appearance, but inside he has dwelt that way. He has analyzed his soul from mind and outgoing faculties. He rises above body consciousness daily. That was what was meant by what the scriptures say, learn to die so that you may begin to live. That is what is meant by when St. Paul said, I die daily. So this is what is meant by to be born anew. This is what is meant when it is said, Kingdom of God cannot be had by observation. It is within you. In the outworldly subjects, we do need the help of somebody who is expert in that way. All these subjects have to do with the outgoing faculties. If you need there somebody to guide you, help you, why not in a case, in a subject which starts when you rise above body, all outgoing faculties? It's a matter of common sense. If you can, well and good. A blind man needs two eyes to see. So we need somebody. Son knows the father and others whom the son reveals. And that sonship continues. So this is what is before us. For that purpose we have joined various schools of thought. And you'll find who can withdraw from outside. Who is not attached outside, very clearly. Who is attached outside, given up to outer pleasures, and live the sensuous way of living, such a man is not fit. Two things, there are five senses of the outgoing faculties, but two of them are most dangerous. The first is lust. The second is anger. All are dangerous, but these are the most dangerous. And even within these two, the first is most dangerous. Kabir says, I will forgive all sins, but not who are given up to unchaste life. These are his words. So naturally, your question will arise, what to speak of those who are married. Well, all scriptures tell us, what does marriage mean? Marriage means taking a companion in life to be with you in weal or woe, in this earthly sojourn, and help each other to know God. That's the highest aim before us. And one duty may be of begetting children. Not 100%. Such a marriage you will also find Christ gave out. Husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church. They should have changed life. One duty, as I told you, is begetting children. When you've got one or two children, all right, you set your example and make their life sublime. So first thing you see, it is called a life of continence. Life, having a life of continence, is called by the rishis to observe brahmacharya. So brahmacharya means control of all the organs of sense. It does not mean mere control of animal passions. If If a man controls only one organ and allows all the others to have free play, is bound to find his effort fruitless. To hear suggestive stories with the ears, to see suggestive sights with your eyes, to taste stimulating food with your tongue, to touch exciting things with hands, etc., and then expect to control the only remaining organ. It is just like putting a hand in fire and expecting that it shouldn't burn. So you'll find perhaps palate is the chief of all. So brahmacharya means, charya word means the course of conduct. And brahm means God. So brahmacharya means to have such a conduct of life adapted to such for God. So it is therefore the control of all the senses, and it will become easy to anyone who controls his passions, his palate. Diet has to do very much about our lives. Whatever sort of food you have, that very effect you've got. If a dog is kept on mere vegetables, that is very amiable. If you keep it on meat, etc., he's growling. Any diet which goes to flare of passions, we have to eliminate. You see? So for that purpose, you'll find in both, this diet flares up, I tell you. Molar Room says, well, it is not the love which arises out of eating bread, etc., but it is the love of the soul, charity. The love attached with the physical body, you see, is called lust. So for that reason, you see, you'll find animals observe brahmacharya more than men. Any animal, you see, when he goes sick, he does not eat. First thing. There is time for their mixing up. And man has no time. It's a pitiable state, I would say. So that is why we are born not to eat, but eating is made for us. So that the body may be maintained. This is a golden opportunity that we have got. Maintain it. Keep it as long as you can. What for? Not for eating, but eating for you to maintain it, so that you may know God. Similarly, all other organs are required to be controlled. So all masters have made great steps on that very thing. So these are the two things specially. What is all that, you see? All these five senses practically mean the same thing. And they hinge on only desire. So to be desireless is to exterminate the very root of other things. So many masters have come to say, as Buddha said, be desireless. Then Guru also said in his own language, be desireless, kamna vahin. When you've got no desire, there's no question of anger. What is anger? When you want to do something or have something, somebody appears to be standing in the way, directly or indirectly, that very impediment in the achievement of your desire is called anger. You see? When there's anger, you see, what happens? You kind of speak slowly. Take the example of one little rivulet or ordinary canal, you might say, going down with the narrow channel. When it is there no impediment in the way, that goes on smooth. You can put a big stone in it, the water retards, strikes against the stone, and two things happen. One, froth and foam by striking. And the other, they're nice. So even those men who become angry, they kind of speak slowly, and there's foam in their mouth. Then when they then touch, oh, I must have it. There's no reason why I should not have it. He puts in all efforts in having it. He makes parties, this and that. When he achieves it, he does not want to leave it. He's attached. This is called attachment. And then he enjoys. So all five senses hinge on the one thing, desire. Out of these, as I told you, two are the most important or the strongest ones control us in the body. So all masters have been telling like that. So whenever you go to the everybody, you see, they say, just it is life. Here we lack very much, you see. And sexuality is death. Those who are not married, they should observe strict chastity. Those who are married, they should regulate their life according to what the scriptures say.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. This morning, our reader is Christine Clevenger. Are you there, Christine?
I'm here, John, yes.
Okay, carry on.
All right. The reading I'm going to, the reading I've selected is the one we all received in the mail. It is called Guru Bhakti. O man, of all the expressions of life, you are at the head, the highest in creation, second only to God Himself. All else was made to serve you. God manifests in the man body more than in any other form of life. And although he does exist in each and every being, yet for this reason, he can be realized in the human form alone. One master remarked, I laugh when I see that the fish in the water is thirsty, which illustrates the soul living in the life-giving presence of the Lord everywhere, and yet asking, where is God? God is in all. We all actually have our living in Him, and there is no place where He is not. And yet, regardless of this, we do not know Him or know where He is. God is our very life sustainer. Were He to withdraw from us for even a single second, we would have to at once leave this body. However, due to ignorance, we are imprisoned within the body and are unable to run out through any of its apertures. The breath goes out of the body, but it cannot stay out because there is a power within which is controlling it and dragging it back again. That power is called God. That same power sustains the astral and causal worlds too. Our soul is an entity of that power, which, while in the human form, can differentiate truth from untruth and can therefore adopt the nature of truth and also make the best of the untruth. All this being so, one can see how fortunate one is to have been given human birth. What is God? God is an ocean of intoxication, or you can call it bliss, which is his nature. If our soul is an entity of that, then naturally love is innate in us. Our soul receives the boon of human birth only after traversing and progressing through the cycle of the 8,400,000 species of life in creation. Therefore, it is thy turn to meet God. This is the time to realize him. And what are the means by which that realization can be effected? The means are already innate in us. Love. God is love, and the soul's nature is also love, or you can call it devotion, adoration, etc. The criterion of love is met when one loses one's identity or personality in the object of one's adoration. In other words, to become one with that. This ability is a natural attribute of the soul, already existing within it, and the soul's natural inclination is to attach itself to someone or something. At present, it is attached to outer things of the world, the body, and those things which are related to the body. Wherever one's attention is, there the soul is. The reason for this strong attachment to outer things is that mind, by diffusing the attention into outer direction, has its focus outwardly upon the body and the world. There is love, but the love turns into attachment in this way. Furthermore, it is not surprising that by constantly seeing and experiencing the innumerable sense objects through the means of the senses, that love or attachment for them increases. And this love for the world brings us to it again and again. The negative reaction of this attachment is expressed in hatred, enmity, and so on. Love is the root cause, yet in attachment one develops love for one person, dislike for another. Is it not so? While the negative expressions continue, one cannot increase one's awareness. Everything has some inclination to revert to its original nature. For instance, the flame of a lighted candle will rise upward, away from the earth, even if you turn the candle upside down, because its source is the sun. You can throw a ball of clay high into the air, but it will return to the earth, its source. The soul is an entity of the Lord, and its nature is to go toward God, but it is bound up with the mind, which, being a material substance, has the habit of leaning toward the material things of life. By any means, it tries to trap us into outer expression, operating through the five senses of knowledge, which in turn work through the five senses of action, and through tossing about in the nine bodily outlets. Through all this attachment, we end up with a misfit love. The love is there, but you can liken it to a pipe with many holes through which the flowing water escapes. If all the holes are sealed except one, the water gushes out with full pressure. Our love is widely distributed, and our soul, therefore, has become the very image of the mind. What is the condition? A single heart with millions of desires upon desires. Where is the place for him to sit? The heart is broken into so many pieces, and those pieces scattered far and wide. Of such a heart, it is said, for him whose heart is not whole, there is no God. How then can we make the heart whole? If that scattered love, which is the soul's expression, is withdrawn from its dispersed condition and concentrated at a single point, would it not then shoot toward its source? If we have not seen God, how can we love Him? How one can contact a powerhouse through any switch which has connection to the powerhouse. Similarly, if one is connected to that manifested connection of God, then love for Him can develop. The very attribute of love is to connect itself to God. It is most natural. To facilitate this withdrawal from outer attractions, however, some place must be established where the attention can be centered. One question remains yet. Without seeing, how can one concentrate? How is it possible to concentrate on something one has never seen? All masters have told man that he must love God and have gone as far as to say, without love, a man is nowhere. This warning applies in both this world and beyond. If only the soul would withdraw from the outer world of senses and come into its true self or nature, the true love would sprout forth. But how to do it? This is where some help is required, is most necessary. And who can help? Only the one in whom the reflection of God exists. One can say he is the switch which has got the direct connection to the powerhouse we call God. And where is God? As I have said, there is no place without Him. He is the very soul of our soul, but we must first contact His reflection. He is in all beings, but the one in whom He has manifested, whose soul has been released from mind and senses and has withdrawn from outer attractions, has come into his true self. Or in other words, he has achieved self-knowledge through self-analysis. It is not a task which is achieved through inferences or feelings, but is done by practical knowledge. At this point, the natural essence of love bursts forth and goes back to its original source. One requires then some help from such a person, from one who sees. The epic account of the Mahabharata tells of Dronacharya, who was a master of archery with a complete and comprehensive knowledge of the art, and of whom it was said that he could stitch a running deer's lips together with a single arrow from his bow. The account relates that one day a low-caste boy from one of the mountain tribes approached Dronacharya with the request to become his pupil. Because of the boy's low caste, Drona refused. The boy, however, was not content to let the matter rest there, and from the memory of the meeting made an image of Dronacharya and started paying his respects to that. His adoration was so intense that by saying, "You, you, I became you. When I-hood was finished, wherever I looked, I saw you." The realization came to the boy that Drona was with him, which would not have been possible if he had not actually seen him, for it would not have been possible for him to meditate with such concentration. This is how idol worship started. The original meaning was different than that which came later. So the simple mountain boy received all the knowledge that Dronacharya had by meditating upon him. One day the boy saw Drona walking in the forest and demonstrated his skill by shooting an arrow which stitched a deer's lips together right in front of Dronacharya. In astonishment, the guru called out, "Who shot this arrow?" And the boy came forward to admit that he had done so. Then Drona asked the boy to name his guru, and the boy replied, "Dronacharya." Drona frowned and said, "But I never made you my disciple, so how can I be your guru?" Now listen carefully to the reply, which is in accordance with the law of nature. The boy replied, "I manifested you within me. As a person thinks, so does he become. If you have an expression in your heart, and you can call it receptivity, then whatever the master is, that you will also get. This is why it is said, for devotion to the Lord, worship the Sat Guru. With his blessing, one gets salvation through Nam. We have a desire to worship God, but we have not seen God. One must reach as high as the highest to know the highest. So love for him in whom God has manifested is the same as love for God. However, one does not love the glass bulb, but rather the light within the bulb. We do appreciate the bulb, which after all has made it possible for us to see the light. Do you understand this? It is called Guru Bhakti. What is the difference, then, between the Guru and the common man? As already explained, the heart is broken in a million pieces, and the love distributed among them. The water passing through the pipe is dripping through the various holes, wasting away. But in the company of one who is connected to the Lord, one can derive a little peace. Even by the smallest connection there, one can get peace. But if one were to withdraw from all outer things and concentrate one's attention single-pointedly, then the pressure of attention would greatly increase. The principal difference is, therefore, that the master's attention has been concentrated in its fullness. There is no water leaking out, and his soul is constantly directed toward its natural source. So wherever he is, that atmosphere is permeated with a powerful charging or radiation. If, for instance, a person visits a perfumery, even without purchasing any perfume, they will appreciate the fragrance that permeates the atmosphere. Similarly, to turn one's attention to a master will enable one to have the radiation or fragrance of his presence. As long as one dwells in the waves of the mind, ego and pride rule. Unless the master's shabd comes, there is no love for Nam. To still the waves of the mind, analyze oneself. Know the silence of the heart. After this, the inner revelation starts, and this is true spirituality, for which a special source is required. What is the criterion of a master? The master is full of a brilliant love, the nectar and color of the Lord. In his company is the true desire created. The masters are lovers of the Lord. They are full of an intoxication, or you can call it the color of the Lord. They are overflowing cups of ambrosial nectar, and to sit in the company of such a person will create a desire for God. To see a man in full health and strength is an incentive to become strong oneself. So in the company of one who is overflowing with intoxication, one does receive some of that same intoxication. And if he also gives that higher contact and a demonstration of the inner stillness, then what more does one require to begin the journey to God? This is called Guru Bhakti, and the embodiment of Guru Bhakti is contact with the manifested God in man through receptivity. Receptivity is Guru Bhakti. In this way, whatever the master has got, that can the disciple receive. As an illustration, there is the story of a group of mural artists who, when visiting a certain country, requested the king of that realm to allow them to demonstrate the beauty of their extraordinary art. The king agreed to this and ordered that a large wall in one of the palace halls be put at their disposal. Some artists among the king's subjects felt that they should also be given a chance to show their talent, and so the opposite wall of the hall was allotted to them, and a long curtain hung in between so that neither group could see what the others were doing. When finally both groups declared that their work was finished, the king was requested to come to view the artwork. The king arrived and viewed the painting that had been done by the foreign artists first. He saw the mural and said that indeed it was a very beautiful piece of work, and that surely no one could do better. The local artists approached the king to ask him to view their work also, and he agreed. But he remarked that from all reports, they had not been doing very much. When they protested at this, the king ordered that the curtain be removed. And when he looked at the work of his own artists, he was astonished to find that the mural was exactly the same design as the foreigners had painted, yet somehow more beautiful. He said he was indeed puzzled to know why he had received the report that his artists were not painting the wall. They explained that this was true. They had not painted it, but had rubbed and rubbed until its surface was perfectly smooth and shining, so much so that it now mirrored the design on the opposite wall, and the reflection of that was even more perfect than the original work, free from brush marks, etc. This story serves to illustrate that one should go on rubbing and cleaning oneself constantly to create a place for love to grow until one becomes the very reflection of love. For this, one must again and again focus one's attention in the right direction. Cleanse the innermost depths of your heart for his arrival. Remove all thoughts of others that he may take their place. You must clean the inner chamber of your heart if you want the beloved whom you desire to come and reside therein. All alien thoughts must be banished, and only one thought remain. This is the process of purifying the heart. To expedite the process, respectful devotion is imperative, without which action and knowledge are but mere empty shells. And once again, true devotion means a single-pointed focusing of attention. By withdrawing the attention from outer environments and objects, that which is already within you will come out. There is nothing to be added there. Yes, you will get an incentive, an upliftment, a driving force from within. What is the condition of one in whom this process has taken place? He is the child of God. We are all children of the world, tied to family, our children, enjoyments, customs, etc. But the child of God does not drink intoxicants. He is intoxicated, always. He has true contentment. He may be outwardly wearing simple clothes, but within He is the King of Kings. He may lead a solitary existence, but in his solitude, he is not alone. Everything in existence is the Lord's reflection. God is an ocean which has no beginning nor end, and he whose drop has gone into that ocean has become the ocean and surges with it. What happens when one meets such a personality? A single meaningful glance from him will raise one's very existence onto another level. The eyes are the place where the soul plays, where its nature is reflected out. Whatever color the soul is drenched in, therefore, is seen through the eyes. This is why the real darshan of a master is always through his eyes. Our Hazur used to say, when people would stoop to touch his feet, he would say, "What is there below? I am up here." Eyes, then, are the windows of the soul, and there is no action for you to do. Just sit before the master and look. Forget everything else. Even if you do not understand what he is saying, you will get the meaning anyway by looking into his eyes. This is the very easiest way of all the easy ways. This is Guru Bhakti. A single glance from a great soul gives salvation. This is quoted from Gurbani. But remember, it cannot be bought. During the time of the 10th Guru, it is related that while the people were sitting before the Guru, one man started running from one position to another, wherever the Guru would turn his gaze, in an attempt to get his darshan. Finally, the Guru told him, "Oh, brother, is this thing so cheap? The upliftment of the soul is a natural happening. When the calf comes to the cow, the milk starts to flow automatically. The calf is quite confident that he will get the milk from his mother. This also is a play of receptivity. Whatever the degree of yearning, so will it be fulfilled. And of those people who come to a guru, many leave with doubts and or bad feelings in their hearts. Others take away the full benefit." Hazur used to explain how the calf comes from some distance to take milk from the cow, but the ticks which are clinging to her udder are always drinking the blood but never getting a single drop of milk. How can those who think of the Guru as a mere man get the true benefit from him? Whosoever thinks of the Guru as only a man will take birth as a dog. A dog full of restlessness and desire, running from one place to another. A man is one who is in control of his senses and uses them according to his own will. We are being dragged around by our senses and are just like animals in this respect. If the condition is the same, what is the difference between man and animal? Shamas Tabriz prayed to his guru with the request that as the wine giver, he should give him one cup of that intoxicating nectar of the Lord, that his heart was yearning to realize him. Oh, please give him just one cup of that nectar. If not a cup, then at least a few drops. This is the nectar which is given through the eyes, not by hand. And to whom? Only to those who are receptive. Those who have had this knowledge, what do they say? Hafiz, the great Muslim prophet, says, "One drop of that which you give is greater than 2,000 drops of the strongest wine. What is worldly wine compared to this intoxication of the soul? We go to the Master for this very thing. Many a doctrine has been drawn up for the purpose of gaining receptivity for this very thing. If receptivity is not developed, then coming and going continues. That is all. There was a sage by the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The great souls often have their own expression or name for the Lord. Guru Nanak used to refer to Sat Katar, which means true creator. You are the truth. You are vibrating throughout all creation. You are the very life essence throughout creation, which ultimately returns back to you. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's expression was Hari Bol, which means say God. He went one day to a riverside where some washermen were washing clothes. He stood beside one man and told him to repeat the words, Hari Bol, but the washerman, thinking was a beggar of some kind, refused. But using his full attention, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu persisted until the man finally agreed and repeated the words. At once, he got intoxicated, left his work, and wandered around repeating the words over and over. The other men also stopped working and gathered around him asking what was wrong. But he merely continued repeating the words, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Infection spreads by infection, and soon the whole group was dancing and repeating, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. This is the reason why true devotees say, Oh, give us one sip of that intoxicant. It is something intoxicating. It cannot be got from scriptures or other books, because life comes from life. The more receptive one becomes, the more one will receive. What then is the remedy or method to receive this? The solutions to everything lie with the guru, but the guru must be a guru, not merely someone acting and posing. And the supreme solution? A true devotee will say, when I find my guru, I will give all devotion to him. And after that, I have not seen God, but I have seen my guru, in whom is God's expression. And to be devoted to him is to be devoted to God. A true devotee is one who has given his heart to his guru and goes about without a heart. How many are there who really have given their hearts to the Master? I will stop reading at that point in that talk and continue next time, and I will close by reading from the Japji, stanza 17. Countless there are that remember thee, and countless those that love thee. Countless there are that worship thee, and countless those that seek thee in austerity and penance. Countless there are that recite from sacred books thy praises, and countless those that absorbed in yoga stand indifferent to the world. Countless those thy devotees who contemplate thy attributes and wisdom, and countless those that practice truth and charity. Countless are the heroes that boldly face the foeman's steel, and countless those who have vowed silence meditate on thee with unceasing love. What power have I to conceive of thy wonderful nature? Too poor am I to make an offering of my life to thee, Whatever pleaseth thee is good. Thou art forevermore, O Formless One. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Christine, for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a minute, I'll do a count. So today there were 75 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.